60 million bison. Only a fraction of that terrain and species remain. Bill McShay, a wildlife ecologist with the Smithsonian who studies grasslands around the world, says he's excited to look at this landscape in North America for the first time.
It has a unique suite of species, and it's something that is being restored. And we're always interested in places that are being restored to some historical condition.
Over the next 3 years, McShay says his organization will be getting its bearings. After that, the hope is to partner with APR and other organizations to restore some species that roam the northern Great Plains, such as bison and the black-footed ferret, the most endangered mammal in North America.
And finally, Mark Richardson tells us government leaders and climate scientists are looking for ways to mitigate temperatures in the Phoenix area and the so-called heat island.
Public health officials say more than 150 deaths were attributed to the intense heat this summer, a number that has risen steadily for the past decade. Maricopa County officials have teamed up with Arizona State University's School of Sustainable Engineering to develop ways to cut the heat and improve air quality. ASU professor Matthew Frazier says they're looking to develop new materials that don't hold heat like traditional building materials such as concrete, glass, and steel.
We're looking both at alternatives to paving, things like porous paving or paving coatings, which would reflect some of the heat. We're looking at understanding the interactions between paving and building materials because sunlight reflected off of paving often impacts on buildings.
This summer, the region saw 128 days of temperatures over 100 degrees, with 22 days hitting 110 or higher. But Frazier says the real problem isn't the daytime heat, but overnights, where the average low temperature has increased by 17 degrees in the past few decades.
By the way, Phoenix is one of the hottest large cities in the country. There are dozens of others in the U.S. and around the world with similar climates that could benefit from this research. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for wrapping up your week, newsin' and cruisin' with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we are online at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Daniel Zuckerman is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Voters in the Cairo-Durham School District go to the polls December 11th to vote on a $28.9 million capital project that would modernize outdated classrooms, create new science labs, and repair athletic fields. District Business Administrator Jeffrey Murillo said the annual local share will be nearly $700,000 a year over 22 years, totaling $15.3 million. Funding sources include $2.4 million from the district's capital reserve and fund balance, as well as $11.1 million in state building aid. For property owners, the proposal means a tax increase of $33.75 a year for a home assessed at $100,000. Superintendent Anthony Taibbi said the district is hoping to finish the project under budget. Taibbi said, and I quote, "Our goal is to come in under this, but we want to make sure that everyone knows what the maximum impact will be," end quote. If the referendum passes, the proposal will then be presented to the State Education Department. It is expected to take 40 weeks for that approval, which would lead to bids going out next winter. The project will be discussed at the December 6 Board of Education meeting. Polls will be open in the Cairo-Durham Middle School cafeteria 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Tuesday, December 11th. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Ken Levette is reporting for the Daily News. New York increases state legislator pay using stipends more than any other states. The commission currently considering a pay raise for lawmakers may also look into whether reforms are needed in how stipends are awarded to individual legislators. The base salary of New York lawmakers is $79,500, the third highest among state legislatures in the nation, behind California and Pennsylvania. However, in New York, the majority of state lawmakers also receive stipends for chairing committees, serving as minority ranking committee members, or holding leadership positions. Those stipends can range from $9,000 to the $41,500 a year given to legislative leaders. According to the State Pay Raise Commission, 160 of 213 New York State legislators receive some kind of stipend that boosts their pay. Critics have long argued the stipends are used by legislative leaders to buy loyalty from their members. Read the full story in the Daily News. Richard Moody is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Columbia County officials are discussing the possibility of banning single-use plastic bags.
The matter is currently under consideration by the County Board of Supervisors County Government Committee at the urging of 4th Ward Supervisor Linda Mussman. Ulster County Executive Michael Hines signed a similar ban in that county into law on October 18th. Board of Supervisors Chairman Matthew Morrell suggested this week the county take a step back and wait to see what the state does during the upcoming legislative session. A ban proposed by Governor Andrew Cuomo in April went nowhere, and several bills introduced in the State Assembly and Senate did not move forward before the session ended in June. The supervisors agreed that something has to be done to move away from the use of single-use plastic bags, but disagree on how that should be done. Stuyvesant Town Supervisor Ronald Knox said, and I quote, "I think this should start with the stores. They can charge a fee for plastic bags and push people to use reusable bags," end quote. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. John Bowden is reporting for The Hill. U.S. Representative Sean Patrick Maloney has withdrawn his name from consideration for chairman of the Democratic Party's congressional campaign arm, according to a letter sent to House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi. In the letter, Maloney thanked Pelosi for her consideration and pointed to his recent hospitalization due to a bacterial infection as the reason for ending his campaign. Maloney, on November 28th, requested a delay on the vote to lead the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, but wrote one day later that his condition would require, and I quote, "a few days of intensive treatment," end quote. The race to lead the DCCC is now a three-way contest between Representatives Susan Delbene of Washington, Sherry Bustos of Illinois, and Denny Heck, also of Washington. Read the full story in The Hill. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, wgxc.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Like good old tap water. Just turn it on and get it.
Where did you go? Are there's good news?
It's time again for Donald
Trump.
Theater.
No one knows what is up or down.
Black
or white.
Legal
or
impeachable.
Everything is make believe in Donald
Trump.
Theater.
So let's
pull
the
curtain
back.
We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. We can change the focus to a soft blur.
You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into.
The things that this show has called him, this approach is, I guess it's kind of like we're living in the Twilight Zone.
Russia had nothing to do with this episode.
Truth isn't truth.
President Trump will spend Thanksgiving at his Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida, and he's going to go around the table and make everyone say why they're thankful for him.
For having a great family and for having a made a tremendous difference in this country. I've made a tremendous difference in the country. No, not at all. I hate the crime. I hate what's done. I hate the cover-up. And I will tell you this, the Crown Prince hates it more than I do. And they have vehemently denied it. The CIA points it both ways. It's, you know, it's, and as I said, maybe it did, maybe it didn't, but I will say very strongly that it's a very important ally. And if we go by a certain standard, we won't be able to have allies with almost any country.
Thanksgiving is a time of great American traditions, and today we continue a very special one when a lucky turkey gets a presidential pardon. That turkey is so lucky. I've never seen such a beautiful turkey.
But these turkeys' reprieve might be short-lived because the turkeys Trump spared last Thanksgiving are already dead. Sad, but they're put to rest according to their wishes in individually labeled Tupperware. Now, Trump might want to pardon someone else because we just learned that senior advisor to the president, Ivanka Trump, used a personal email account to send hundreds of emails about government business last year. This is really damaging if anything mattered anymore.
The president today took part in what they do every year, the turkey parting ceremony at the White House. This is a tradition that goes back to the 1860s when Abraham Lincoln's son begged him to pardon pet turkey. This year, the pet turkey will be begging the president to pardon his son. But the president approached the turkey cautiously, you see, because you never know when they might attack. And then he summoned all his magic powers as president.
Please. I hereby grant you a full pardon.
There you go. Meanwhile, poor Paul Manafort is watching Fox News in his prison cell going, oh, the hell with me, I guess.
I beg your pardon, my dear.
Sir, last night, in response to last night's 60 Minutes piece, you said your policy at the border was the same as the Obama administration's. It wasn't. You decided to prosecute.
Say it again, what?
In response to last night's 60
yeah,
Minutes.
Yeah, so I'll tell you what. Obama had a separation policy. We all had the same policy.
You did not have,
I tried
sir,
to
no,
do
you
it
didn't.
Differently. But Obama had a separation policy, but people don't like to talk about
sir,
that.
Sir, it was different. You decided to prosecute everyone at the border.
Sarah. Did President Trump commit a crime?
I actually can say with all honesty, President Trump did not commit a crime. All right, next question.
Given that the president promised to hire the best people, did he fail to live up to that promise?
Yeah, sorry, that was miscommunicated. He promised to get the best peephole. It's a hole in the women's bathroom that he can look through. Ah.
And presidential?
Nope. Next question. Dummy?
So how do you explain that?
Well, you know, he wasn't shown love in his formative years, and he was taught that his only value was money, you know, and he didn't earn his money. You know, he was constantly given it from his father. That's when he, like, started, you know, gold plating everything and wearing suits that matched his car and... He never really emotionally grew past, like, 8 years old because his mother had this, odd disdain for him. And because of it, he you know, reenacted the trauma through copying her hair.
Sarah. Today, and say the president has never lied to the American people.
Yeah. You know why? Because I'm f***ing crazy.
Sarah,
pencil neck.
This is the kind of precedent he wants to set for future presidents when his administration is out of office.
The future. Jerry, did you hear that? How cute is that? Sweetie, it's the end of days. All right, I gotta go. Don't be enemies of the people. Peace.
Please pardon yourself.
President Trump, day after day, waging a war on reality. Confronted with facts that don't fit his view of the world, his strategy is this: deny, deny, deny. Today, falsely claiming that migrant children were not tear gassed at the border this weekend.
We don't use it anymore.
And the fact is, children were tear gassed. This is a president who not only denies reality, denies what we have seen with our own eyes, he denies what members of his own administration tell him. There is the big climate change report the White House tried to bury by releasing it on the day after Thanksgiving. A report produced by a team of 13 federal agencies, 1,656 pages full of facts, of science, and really frightening predictions about what could happen as temperatures continue to rise. Food could be scarcer, the U.S. economy could lose hundreds of billions of dollars, and thousands more Americans, quite frankly, could die. We're already seeing evidence that this country is being hurt by climate change. Farmers in Georgia could lose $2.5 billion in the wake of Hurricane Michael. But when burying that report didn't work, President Trump, or President T, as he has nicknamed himself this weekend, simply said he doesn't believe it, even though it's his own administration's report.
Yeah, I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
This is a president who's not only anti-science, he's anti-intelligence. His own CIA has concluded that Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman personally ordered the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. But President T continues to defend the Saudis and the Crown Prince, saying maybe he did and maybe he didn't. And he's made it very clear why he's so willing to defend the Saudis. It's all about the Benjamins.
Concerned that by not punishing Saudi Arabia more, it could send a message to other world leaders that they can do as they please and America could be weak in their eyes?
No, not at all. Saudi Arabia has been a long-time strategic partner. They're investing hundreds of billions of dollars in our country. I mean, hundreds of billions.
And of course, this president has consistently ignored the clear conclusion of his own intelligence community that Russia interfered in the 2016 election. Tonight in Mississippi, at it again, falsely calling the Russia investigation a witch hunt.
We have a lot of bad people. We have a lot of phony stuff like the Russian witch hunt garbage.
So this is not true. No matter how many times he says it, the fact is this. Three people have been sentenced to prison in the Russia investigation. Ask them if they think it's phony. One of them, George Papadopoulos, just started his sentence today. 35 people and entities have been charged with a total of 191 criminal counts. 191 criminal counts. So witch hunt? Not so much. So maybe it shouldn't be a surprise that this president seems awfully eager to let the Russians off the hook for opening fire on and seizing three Ukrainian vessels near Crimea. An act the president's own ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, says the international community must condemn. But the president himself was about as mealy-mouthed as he could possibly be. Why can't the tough guy be tough on Russia?
We don't like what's happening, and hopefully it'll get straightened out.
On the same day, the president bragged about manufacturing jobs.
The previous administration, they said manufacturing's never coming back. It's gone. You need a magic wand. Well, we found the magic wand, and that's actually going to be increasing by a lot in the next short while because we have a lot of companies moving in.
That was the same day he bragged about manufacturing jobs. It was bad news for GM today. The company announcing it will cut 15% of its jobs and close five North American plants.
And this was yet another crisis at the border of Donald Trump's own making. It didn't have to happen.
Right.
And the reason that this happened, just like 2,600 kids were separated from their parents down there, 5,000 if you go by the 60 Minutes number or some of the other reporters have been working on this for a long time. What happened down there over the weekend was the result of basically throttling the amount of people who could come in to seek asylum on any given day. It's called metering. And they only let about 100 people in at a time. I was shown numbers by the Department of Homeland Security that there were 2,000 people on the ground there before the so-called caravan even showed up. So there is, let's make no mistake, there is no war zone on the border The cities along the southern border are some of the safest cities in the country.
That's right.
Even though some of those cities on the other side of Mexico are very dangerous, Donald Trump has created the image of a war zone by making it a boiling point and allowing it to get to that place. It certainly doesn't have to be that way.
You know, really, the caravan should be called a slow-moving humanitarian crisis.
Correct.
That is what it is.
Why is a parent running up into an area where they know the tear gas is forming and it's going to be formed, and they're running up with a child? And in some cases, you know, they're not the parents. These are people, they call them grabbers.
Who calls them grabbers?
Nobody. Not a single person. In fact, people in the Department of Homeland Security, I was actually told by one person that they laughed when they heard this because it's sort of such an outrageous kind of way to put this. What he's referring to are what are known as fraudulent family units, basically people that come to this country and pretend to be with a younger person and say, I'm the person's father, I'm the person's mother. And the reality of the situation is DHS sent out numbers last night, publicly available, that it was around 525 fraudulent family units between April and September.
Usually they're relatives. Usually what they do is misrepresent the association. They say they're a parent, they're often an aunt.
Yeah, but listen to this. 525 out of 280,000 people, I'm horrible at math, but that is less than 1%, I believe, of all people apprehended along the southern border. So Donald Trump making a big deal about so-called grabbers.
Yeah.
He's talking about less than 1% of everybody that comes through the southern border.
Most of these people trying to surge across the wall are male, and they've confirmed at DHS there are about 600 confirmed criminals as part of that caravan. So this idea that everybody there is peacefully seeking asylum is just false, and you ought to cover it.
Ridiculous. We don't know who's in that group of 600 criminals. Those are all deportees, by the way. She's referring to people who have been deported from the United States, according to DHS. I called and asked, who are those 600? But they won't give us data breakdowns on what those 600 people did. Are they traffic violations? Did they run a red light and get deported out of the country, and they're being classified as violent criminals, people that we have to be scared of, really bad people, thugs, whatever the president says? Or did they actually commit, you know, more serious crimes? And if they did, how many of them in that group are serious criminals? Are you tracking them? And what's being done to stop those people from getting into the United States? It's pretty simple and straightforward. It's called law enforcement, and it's done every day inside the United States. They know who these folks are. Why aren't you being more transparent in that 600 group with a breakdown of what they did?
What the president's supporters will do is go back to the tape of people throwing rocks and highlight the fact that they're not thankful and they're not humble and they're not seeking asylum. They're coming here to throw rocks at our border agents, who the president, of course, incorrectly or falsely described as being very badly hurt. He will say whatever it takes, and he will brand them as grabbers and make up new descriptions and talk about what he knows about the science of tear gas. Whatever it takes to get from here to there, the consequences be damned. What was interesting about watching the video and the coverage, the different coverage of it, is that our military wasn't there and clearly wasn't necessary, and there was no wall there, and that clearly wasn't necessary. So it's hard for him to make the argument that this didn't work to keep the rock throwers away if he's trying to make the argument that these people are not here to seek asylum and that they're violent. So how do you make the argument and threaten to shut the government down over the need for a wall and the deployment of 5,000 active duty troops when this was an incident that was handled without that?
He ran on a fake story about a humanitarian crisis in Central America and Mexico and got his butt kicked. Erodes the power of the fear. But he sort of scooped up everyone he can get with the fear-mongering of anyone other.
Well, it's desperate. But I actually have to say, turning to the Democrats and their responsibility here, I'm disappointed and concerned that we haven't seen a united front, a united message from the Democrats about this issue, not just about Trump's behavior and his language around what really is a humanitarian crisis, but also, you know, Trump, as long as he, you know, is able to get away and be unchallenged in language he uses, dehumanizing this group of people, as long as no one's actually providing an alternate narrative, that's the narrative that stands.
So the wall has started very, very substantially. In fact, you saw the other day, the wall stopped everybody, and it was only the section that's now under construction. They breached it, but only momentarily. It didn't take long. Momentarily. That was called a very momentary breach.
They breached the section of the new wall that hasn't been built yet. What's he talking about?
There, let's just say it super clearly. There is no new wall. You know, I've been to those prototypes on multiple occasions. I promise you. I mean, there is not one stretch of wall along the 2,000 miles of southern border that looks anything like any of those eight different prototypes. Congress did not approve the funding for Donald Trump's border wall. There is not a single version that was approved and put into place. And so what he's saying is just completely factually inaccurate. It's just not true. Simply not true.
Let's begin with the new court filing concerning former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort. Robert Mueller's office is accusing Manafort of violating the plea deal he agreed to earlier this year. In a joint status report filed last night, Mueller's team wrote this, quote, after signing the plea agreement, Manafort committed federal crimes by lying to the Federal Bureau of Investigation and to the special counsel's office on a variety of subject matters which constitute breaches of the agreement. But Manafort's lawyers are disputing those assertions. In that same filing, his legal team writes in part, Manafort has provided information to the government in an effort to live up to his cooperation obligations. He believes he has provided truthful information and does not agree with the government's characterization or that he has breached the agreement.
I know Mr. Manafort, haven't spoken to him in a long time, but I know him. He was with the campaign, as you know, for a very short period of time, relatively short period of time. But
Manafort has nothing to do with our campaign. Paul Manafort worked for me for a very short period of time. He worked for me, what, for 49 days or something? A very short period of time.
He happens to be a very good person. Doesn't involve me, but I still feel, you know, it's a very sad thing that happens. This has nothing to do with Russian collusion.
I have great respect for what he's done in terms of what he's gone through. But he did some of the charges they threw against him. Every consultant, every lobbyist in Washington probably does. I didn't know Manafort well. He wasn't with the campaign long.
A bit after he first began trying to get a job with the Trump campaign in February 2016, there was that memo offering to work for free. Tonight, for the first time, we now see the report that he met with Assange that next month, March. And it was in that month that Trump took Manafort up on the offer, hiring to work at the Republican convention. Now, Manafort hadn't done that kind of work in years. And he had a reputation with controversial dealings, authoritarian business, but none of that held him back within the Trump campaign. And by May, he was campaign chair. Now, 1 month before the infamous Trump Tower meeting, where all those people met with the Russians in an effort to get dirt on Hillary Clinton. And then consider this. It was the very next month that the Republican platform mysteriously changed to be more friendly towards Russia. And by that time, WikiLeaks had begun putting out hacked material from the DNC. And Paul Manafort was even getting publicly pressed on what I mentioned, his ties to Russia.
Are there any ties between Mr. Trump, you or your campaign, and Putin and his regime?
No, there are not. It's absurd. And, you know, there's no basis to it.
So to be clear, Mr. Trump has no financial relationships with any Russian oligarchs.
That's what he said. That's what I said. That's obviously what our position is.
That may be what Manafort's lies look like a little bit. That was July. And then I want to show you something that we dug up today. A truly epic TV moment on the same day Manafort went on Meet the Press along with, on that day, Julian Assange.
Joining me this morning are the two top strategists from both campaigns. Also, hack attack and the Russian connection. I talked to WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange.
Both Manafort and Assange talked all about the Russian hacks.
Does it not also matter if a foreign government wants to take part in our election? Do you condemn that?
Of course we condemn that. That's not the issue at all. Mr. Trump was making the point that isn't it ironic that 33,000 emails that our FBI can't have are sitting probably in the vaults of foreign countries?
If a foreign government is involved, isn't that crucial information to civilians?
I think that is an interesting question. We can't, you know, go around speculating on who our sources are. That would be irresponsible.
Well, no, you can't speculate. You know the answer.
He did know the answer.
But is there any indication, in spite of what we apparently have just heard from Sarah Huckabee Sanders, that a pardon's off the table? Because our colleagues at the New York Times have reported that there is a possibility. It was discussed by Trump's legal team and Manafort and Flynn lawyers. Yeah, well, first, on the way that President Trump has talked about Paul Manafort, let's be clear, he's only talked about him in the sense that he's been, doesn't really know him, and he wasn't significant on his campaign since Paul Manafort was in legal trouble. Paul Manafort did play a significant role in the campaign, particularly in the run-up to the Republican convention, and served several months, not just 49 days on his campaign. In terms of pardons, we have seen reports from New York Times that the president's legal team dangled a pardon for Paul Manafort. But here's the thing about a pardon by the president for Paul Manafort. Even if he were to do that, Chris, he would then potentially face state charges for some of these crimes that he's admitted to committing, whether it's bank fraud or tax fraud. So even if President Trump wanted to pardon him, that would not preclude any action by state prosecutors, and potentially Paul Manafort would still face jail time. So it's not clear how that would actually help him.
Yep. Nicole, I've long said on your show that Manafort is the vector by which the campaign caught the Russian infection. And if the reporting from The Guardian is accurate, then Mueller has this already. And Mueller is now closing that loop between the Russia connection, the Russian government, the Trump campaign, and WikiLeaks. And if you close that loop, you've got your collusion case developed. The question is this what Manafort is willing to die in prison for? Is he really holding back on the fact that he was that go-between between the Russians and Julian Assange regarding the release of the hacked emails? If that's true, we've got the collusion case. We just need to wait and see, and wait for the next filing for Mueller to tell us why he knows Manafort is lying to him, and have him lay that out for us publicly.
It's possible that Russia actually sent and dispatched Paul Manafort to the Trump campaign, or at least that once Paul Manafort attached himself to the Trump campaign, the Russians said, okay, our agent is now on the inside, and that they tried to manipulate the campaign, not just through propaganda, not just through Russia Today, but also through agents of influence. And I think ultimately when it comes down to it...
So are you saying it's possible that they're going to want to find out if Manafort was a Russian plant? Is that one of the questions the investigation is going to try to answer?
Absolutely. They're going to want to know whether or not there were ties between Paul Manafort and Russia, whether they were financial or otherwise, that caused him to, in effect, do Russia's bidding. And whether wittingly or unwittingly, in the same situation that Mike Flynn found himself in, whether he was doing work on behalf of the Russian Federation inside the Trump campaign. And then the ultimate question, Nicole, is whether or not Trump himself knew about it.
You don't even have to take his worst case scenario that Manafort was sent by the Russians. There's a scenario that's not quite that extreme where Manafort got there on his own. But then once he was there, decided to use his position in the Trump campaign, as a bridge with the Russians and with the Russian connections that he had, Russian oligarchs and members of the Russian intelligence service, who we know he was communicating with while he was on the Trump campaign. We don't yet know the substance of all of those communications, but we know it's been public that he's been communicating with his former associate, who is a member of Russian intelligence, while he was running the campaign. So I think if this report in The Guardian is true, I think what it does is it reduces the number of dots you have to connect. We've always wondered, is the communication from, Julian Assange to Roger Stone to the campaign, or is it from Assange to Corsi to Stone to the campaign? This would shrink that number of dots and make it just directly from WikiLeaks to the campaign itself in the form of the campaign chairman.
It also re-upped some of the questions about, Donald Trump, he tweeted this week something about hundreds of people who can attest to never talking to Russians, something no one on a campaign has ever said. I can attest to that. But it was a small circle. So Paul Manafort wouldn't have had these contacts without the president's people closest to him knowing about it. And if you just take the members or the participants of the Trump Tower meeting, and you have to assume that some of these things went down. Well, who's around? Well, Jared was around. Don Jr. was around. Paul Manafort was around. You sort of have the same universe of individuals who were in that Trump Tower meeting where they willingly and gleefully went to get dirt on Hillary Clinton from Russians, now under scrutiny for potential contacts with Assange.
Well, and also, as you've pointed out, they were at the RNC convention,
right,
too.
Changing the platform for the first time
Ambassador
in history.
You've got Kislyak. You've got KK, Konstantin Kalimnik. Right. You've got Paul Manafort's right-hand man who's been indicted. You have all of these various players who are interacting with the top levels of the Republican National Committee.
Now, tonight, the New York Times reports more of what happened after Manafort made that cooperation deal with Mueller's prosecutors, the one that appears to have gone so badly wrong. I'll read you the lead here. This is just posted by the New York Times. Quote, A lawyer for Paul Manafort repeatedly briefed President Trump's lawyers on his client's discussions with federal investigators after Mr. Manafort agreed to cooperate with the special counsel. That's according to one of Mr. Trump's lawyers and two other people familiar with the conversations. The arrangement was highly unusual, and it inflamed tensions with Mr. Mueller's office when prosecutors discovered it after Manafort began cooperating 2 months ago. Quote, some legal experts speculated that it was a bid by Mr. Manafort for a presidential pardon, even as he worked with the special counsel in hopes of a lighter sentence.
Preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State. From the 2017 album A Shadow in Time, here's new music from William Baczynski. This is called For David Robert Jones.